Ghost towns, lake monsters, and creatures that defy explanation. Our heartland is crawling with creatures that will have you looking over your shoulder the next time you take a hike or go for a nighttime drive. The Midwest. Yeah, we are cornfields, and we're so much more. We're your hosts. I'm Kim Lang.
And I'm Jack Lang. From giant dogs to terrifying lake monsters, we're uncovering the chilling lore and fascinating stories behind these unique creatures. You're listening to More Than Corn.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode. We're glad you're here and we hope you're having a great week. Hey, if you like the podcast, please recommend us to a friend. We're sorry that we weren't with you last week. Some people were kind of busy and tied up. Hey, Jack, what's going on?
Well, as you said, busy and tied up. That was an apt description of last week for me because last week was finals week. Oh, yay. Soul leaving body.
Soul leaving body.
So that happened. And that's about all I have to say about that. Well, no. I mean, it was okay. Finals are not easy. And so, you know, if at this point, if you can survive, if you can pass the classes, then I call it a win. I call it a win. They say C's get degrees, you know, it's okay. It's all I think it went all right. We'll see.
For me. Well, I mean, I had to move you guys home, so that was fun. I spent the first half of last week just moving people home. And then there was like giant piles of laundry to do and sorting through all the stuff that moved back into the house. So that's always fun. But here's the thing. Here's the more important thing. Let's talk about this. It's the month of May. You know what that means.
Indy 500.
That's right. The track is open. The drivers are there. The cars are there. They've had the opening festival. It is the month of May. I'm excited. I don't know what else to say. We're going to settle in for a great month of events and cars and drivers and qualification times and practice times, and it all leads up to race day. It's a great time of year. You know, we'll just keep everybody posted along the way. Today, so last time we took a little tour around the Midwest to talk about all the fun roadside attractions while you're on your road trips. Now, that's the fun part of your road trip. This week, I thought we would essentially do another road trip around the Midwestern states, but this time we're going in search of creepy cryptids like Sasquatch and the Loch Ness Monster and the Montauk Monster and the Chupacabra.
The Loch Ness Monster?
Well, except none of those guys are in the Midwest. We're going to talk about the Midwestern ones. All right, but you know what a cryptid is, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like every place around the world has like their cryptid. So yeah, it's like that your mythological story of, you know, some strange creature that's tied to a region or area, and you know, there are legends built up around it. And I have a lot to say on this subject, so we'll get into it. And
well, that's why I kind of waited for you to get through finals, because I thought you would really enjoy this one. But yeah, they're all legendary local creatures that have never been substantiated or proven by science, but people swear they've seen them. And did you know that there was something called cryptozoology, which is the study of these cryptid creatures? Existence is circumstantial at best. Do you believe in Sasquatch?
Do I? I cannot deny that Sasquatch may exist, but at present, there is not enough substantial evidence to indicate that Sasquatch is likely a real species living on this earth.
Well, I mean, I hear what you're saying, because even cryptozoology admits that there is really not enough material evidence to prove that these creatures and monsters exist. But I will say that Bigfoot and Sasquatch are two of the most famous American cryptids. We share them with Canada, just like we share Paul Bunyan. According to satelliteinternet.com, across the 12 Midwestern states, there have been 1,391 sightings reported of Bigfoot. They're reported to the Bigfoot Research Field Researchers Organization. And guess which Midwestern state has the highest number of reportings of sightings of Bigfoot slash Sasquatch?
If I were going to guess, well, I already know which one it is, but I'm going to pretend I don't.
Okay. Okay. Pretend you didn't see that.
If I were going to guess before actually knowing the real answer, I would have said Montana.
That's not a Midwestern state.
Oh, Midwestern state. Okay, then yeah. I probably would have said Michigan.
See, yeah, I think if I hadn't looked it up, because I was surprised by the answer too, and I would have
Michigan
said...
Michigan or Iowa?
I would have said either Wisconsin or Minnesota.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of Minnesota, not Iowa.
No, but I mean, people have reported Bigfoot and Sasquatch in Michigan. It's fair. There's a lot of forest up there. Ironically, it's Ohio at 302.
Yes, a lot of people who say, okay, I understand that the point of this episode is to try to, you know, create some intrigue around some interesting legends. But I'm sorry. All right, I'm an engineer. I just explained finals. I just did a bunch of finals on, you know, math and science, and I'm a man of science. All right, I need the science and the research and the empirical evidence to go behind everything.
You won't just take it on eyewitness accounts?
No, because people like to be famous, and so lots of people will say that they saw Bigfoot just to get attention for 12 hours.
All right, well, not all of our cryptids are Bigfoot, so let's see what you think as we go along.
I know. I'm sorry. I need to curb this attitude, but...
You are quite the skeptic.
I will. Okay. Remainder of the episode, I will keep my mind open.
Well, let's start in Ohio because, you know, why not? Ohio is home to the Loveland Frogman, the Loveland Frog, the Loveland Lizard, whatever you want to call it.
I do have a fun story about this one after you're done.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, I love fun stories. So the Loveland Frogman is, we know him as the Loveland Frogman. I haven't heard those other Loveland Frog or Loveland Lizard. I've always heard it as the Loveland Frogman. He is described, or it is described, as a frog lizard-like humanoid capable of standing up on 2 feet. And when it does so, it's about 4 feet tall. So it's just a big giant walking frog. All right. So legend has it, or the legend started in 1955 when a local businessman, allegedly a Bible salesman from the Loveland, Ohio area, which is just northeast of Cincinnati along the Little Miami River, he claims to have seen three of these frog-like creatures standing up on their back legs. And then in 1972, a policeman claimed to have seen a frog-faced creature looking rather leathery and standing up like a human. And then the latest sighting of the Loveland Frogman happened in 2016 when a man playing Pokemon Go in an area near the Little Miami River. Yep, he says that he saw the Loveland Frogman as well. So
I hate to add to the meme culture that has surrounded Ohio in recent years.
You're not going to do it, are you?
I just want to say it is very fitting. Only in Ohio are you going to find a man playing Pokemon Go who wandered so far into the woods at night, he started seeing mythical creatures popping out of the woodlands.
Well, to make you feel better about your, what I want to say, your suspicions about this cryptid, there is no solid evidence that has ever been produced that the Loveland Frogman, frog lizard man exists. However, It remains a popular figure in Ohio folklore with locals and cryptid enthusiasts. So people are still trying to track down and substantiate and prove the Loveland Frogman exists. Now, what's your story?
My story is, do you want to guess when I first heard about the Loveland Frogman?
I don't know. Were you out with your friends fishing the river and somebody brought it up? Okay.
I heard about the Loveland Frogman in the most unlikely of places.
Really?
Driver's Ed.
What?
So our driver's ed instructor was a guy named Rob. Rob was great. And sometimes instead of teaching driver's ed, he would go into long-winded stories about just whatever he felt like for the day. And so at one point during our, what was supposed to be our driver's ed class, somehow the Loveland Frogman came up. And for whatever reason, Rob appeared to be an expert on the subject. I don't know. Maybe he's one of these, you know, cryptid chaser people. But, you know, he launched into the same story that you just recapped for us. He even added a few extra details. So I remember him saying that, you know, in the case of the Bible salesman, the guy who first sighted them.
Yeah.
That he reported not only did he see three frogmen, but he also witnessed all one of them whip out a magic wand, wave it over his head, sparkles appeared, and then they all vanished.
Really?
So apparently Loveland Frogmen are magic as well. And then the other thing he told us was he also recounted the second sighting by that policeman. This is where I get a little, because apparently, I guess, I don't remember if this is correct or not. I think there was something about how he saw this thing and shot at it.
Oh, maybe.
And later, somebody found a tailless iguana in around the same area. I don't, dead or alive, I'm not sure which. But and so there was some kind of I want to say there was some kind of connection between, well, maybe he just saw, you know, an iguana,
yeah,
and thought it was a frogman. I don't know. I would think that, I mean, I don't know. Maybe your average policeman just doesn't know what an iguana looks like, but.
But a 4-foot iguana walking on two legs, that would still be pretty weird.
I don't know. What I will say is that, yeah, three eyewitness accounts, one that reports sparkles and a magic wand. I don't want to imply anything on this show. I really don't. It's never my goal to say anything poor about anyone. I'm just saying that.
All right, let's go to Michigan. This one is not so friendly as the Loveland Frog. I mean, like, here's the thing: you never hear anything but like the Loveland Frogman might, you know, wave a wand and there might be sparkles, but they don't attack people. But the Loveland or the Michigan Dogman, I mean, we go from the wetlands of Ohio to the forests of Michigan, where this Michigan Dogman seems to prowl. I don't know. This one's kind of weird. Okay. So sightings of this guy describe it as having the head of a dog and the body of a human. Like the Loveland Frogman, it walks on two legs. But it stands anywhere between 6 and 10 feet tall, depending upon who sighted it and is giving a description. It allegedly sounds like a combination between, like, the sounds that it makes sounds like a combination between human screams and a wolf's howl. Some would say that the legend started with Native Americans and its close ties to a Wendigo. But others say that the legend about the Michigan Dogman started in 1887 when a couple of lumberjacks in the northwest part of the Lower Peninsula, like near the Cadillac, Michigan region, reported encountering this half man, half dog thing. And the majority of the sightings that have been reported in the Lower Peninsula have been near Manistee National Forest. That's where they get the majority of their sightings. Okay. So this thing is like serious business in Michigan folklore. It is just completely woven into the fabric of the state's heritage. And the sightings and the encounters are passed down to the generations. The legend claims that every 10 years on the years that end in 7 is when the dog man appears. So you don't even see it all the time, which I think is oddly specific. But anyway, in 1917, a sheriff who was walking came up on, this is one of the sighting stories, okay? Came up on a driverless wagon, and the four horses that were pulling the wagon were all dead. There were dog tracks all around the wagon. And after examining the horses, a veterinarian said that it looked like the horses had all been literally scared to death. And then in 2017, a truck driver was driving through Manistee National Forest when he says he encountered the dog man. He claims that after fixing an air leak, hydraulics or something on his truck, he was driving down the road and all of a sudden this creature was running beside his truck and like clawing at the window. And he says he shot at the creature because he was armed. He claims he shot it in the head. So that,
can I interrupt for a second?
Well, so that means that like maybe he killed it. We don't know. We won't know until 2027. But if he shot it and he shot it in the head like he said he did, maybe Michigan doesn't have to worry about this guy anymore.
Well, okay. So the sheriff's story, that was when?
The sheriff's story was from 1917.
Okay. And what kind of wagon are we talking? Are we talking like a...
I'm just assuming like a buckboard or something, or I don't know.
We were still using horses in 19... It doesn't matter.
Some
anyway.
People were. Yeah, I'm sure farmers and stuff were still using, you know, wagons and horses and things to work around the farms and stuff.
All righty. Well, I have some problems with this.
Okay.
So I held it in as long as I could.
Okay.
This first one isn't even really a sighting because nobody saw it. We just...
Yeah. Wait, do you mean the Native American tradition that compares it to the Wendigo? Or do you mean the lumberjacks that said that they saw it?
No, I'm sorry. I meant the sheriff. The sheriff who found the wagon with the dead horses.
That's true.
Nobody even saw the thing.
Yeah, they only found dog tracks allegedly around the wagon.
And here's the real rub is we've said it has the head and the face of a dog, but the body of a human, right?
Correct.
So how could it leave dog tracks? Boom, mic drop, story negated, lock them up.
Well, so you...
Lying under oath.
No, nobody was under oath. Okay, so you're not wrong in that, again, in the case of the Michigan dog man, there has been no concrete evidence to prove of its existence, and it does still remain a mystery. But I go back to this. So if the truck driver in 2017 claims that he shot it in the head, if it does not, well, no, that doesn't really help us. I was going to say, if it doesn't appear in 2027, then that proves that he killed it, but it doesn't necessarily prove anything. We would actually need to see it in 2027.
See, here's the thing. On the one hand, I congratulate the truck driver for not being that guy in the horror movie who goes up to what he thinks is the dead body and then gets eaten.
Yeah.
So he's done that correctly. But there's a part of me that says he should have. Just to, because now we don't know. Now it's like, well, he could have shot it in the head, but I mean, did he report seeing it drop? Did it fall next to him or?
I don't know. But this guy, there is like a YouTuber that...
Where's the details? Where's the... Well, what happened after he shot it?
You can watch his interview on YouTube. I can't think of, I don't, like, if you look it up, there is a whole interview with this guy that gives his firsthand account of
now experience. If it were me personally, and I saw something running next to my truck with the body of a human and the head of a dog, and it's trying to claw its way into my truck, and I shoot it, and I think I've hit it in the head, I'm pretty sure, number one, wouldn't there be other... I mean, was this on a highway? Was this on a country road? What kind of truck was it? Was it a...
I think it was a fairly big truck. I think he was hauling some sort of cargo or freight or something. But But that's where I kind of got confused, because I don't really know what road would take you through Manistee National Forest that you would be hauling cargo or freight through Manistee National Forest. But I don't know that area up
even
there very
assuming,
well.
Even assuming that there were no other cars on the road, it's just you. You're all alone.
There wasn't, because he said it was late at night. Like it was like at that dusky twilight time. No. In his interview, he said it was still, I don't know. He said it was still light outside, but that it was later in the day.
See, if it were me and I saw something like this, would I keep driving or would I have to figure out?
Oh, I would totally keep driving. Are you kidding me? I would lock the doors and I would start speeding. I would not look back.
But would you not sit there and say, what if my eyes just, my eyes have to have been playing a trick on me there?
Well,
because if you actually think you saw it, if he's not just making this up for publicity here. If you actually think you saw this thing, wouldn't you have to sit there and consider it had the face of a dog and the body of a human? Nothing like that exists anywhere. I have to go make sure that that's what I just saw.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, like, other people would say, what do you mean you're just going to drive away? This is like your opportunity to take a photo of it, get photographic evidence, take video of it. Like, you can't run away from that sort of thing. You got to take advantage of it.
It's not even to me, it's not even taking advantage. It's just like, if I saw something like that going on outside my window, I don't think I'd feel safe to drive anymore. Because,
well, I certainly wouldn't hike at night through Manistee for sure. I mean, I would definitely want to be in some sort of.
But if you saw something like that outside of your driver's window, wouldn't you sit there and go, I'm hallucinating? Yep. Okay.
Maybe. I think I'd want to get out of Dodge, though, to be honest with you.
But are you getting out of Dodge, or are you driving headlong over the edge of the bridge coming up into the stream below?
No.
Because you no longer have grasp of your mental faculties.
No. All right. We're going back to amphibians now.
Okay.
Okay. So in the state of Indiana, they have the Beast of Busco, otherwise known as Oscar to the locals. He doesn't sound as scary as the Michigan Dogman, I'm not going to lie. Okay. The Beast of Busco is a 500-pound, 6-foot-wide snapping turtle that allegedly has been living in Folk Lake in Churubusco, Indiana, which is just
an amphibian.
Yeah. Well,
snapping turtles are reptiles.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. Well, he lives in Folk Lake in Churubusco, Indiana, outside of Fort Wayne for Lord knows how long. This Titan's existence was first reported in 1948 when two fishermen reported seeing this giant terrapin. Is that how you say that? Terrapin? They were fishing on Oscar Folk's Folk Lake. And when Oscar Folk sold his farm to Gail Harris, Harris and other folks in the community also reported seeing the giant turtle. Word spread quickly and the story picked up traction. And before you know it, the national media was going crazy and you had all kinds of curious visitors that flocked to Busco to see if they could get a look at this thing. Apparently, they made many attempts to try to catch it, but he was very elusive and nobody has ever been able to snag it. It's apparently too fast, too smart. There have been books, songs and movies created about the Beast of Busco, and the town of Churubusco has Turtle Days, which is a festival to honor their very unusual town resident. Some people wonder where Oscar is today because they haven't seen him in a while, but apparently he's still lurking in the lake. He's just outsmarted everyone and knows how to avoid people. He doesn't sound as scary as the Michigan Dogman. I will say that again. I'm not scared. I mean, just avoid a big giant snapping turtle. You want to avoid snapping turtles anyway, regardless of size. Take your fingers off, man.
I mean, I'll give it credit that at least here they're just saying that it's an abnormally large version of a species which does exist.
Correct. It's just a ginormously big, unusually big snapping turtle. 500 pounds, that's a big snapping turtle.
And I guess I could believe that maybe at one point maybe not a turtle quite that size, but a very, very big, abnormally large common snapping turtle may have been in that lake and, you know, and all that. So could have existed once, probably not 500 pound size existed, but that is the one I like the most so far.
I wouldn't have any problem staying away from Oscar and giving him the right of way if he is walking in front of me. I mean, you know, I like there's been nothing that says that like he's overturning boats or attacking people, or, you know, apparently he's just a big turtle that is living his life in a lake.
That is nice. Yes.
Okay. But this next one, I don't know how I feel about this one. In Illinois, we have the Enfield Horror or the Enfield Monster, but it is described as the most unusual cryptid. The Enfield Horror was first reported in 1973 when a man said his children were screaming that there was a strange creature that was trying to break into their house. So the man went to the door, I guess, to size the situation up. He claims he came face to face with it. Again, he had his firearm with him. He shot at it, but it hopped off into the night. And apparently this thing is so big and so athletic that it can cover a lot of ground very quickly. So like eyewitness accounts said that with each hop was like about 50 feet. So no, it covered 50 feet in like three hops. So this guy can get around. What makes him so unusual is that he doesn't follow the normal pattern of most cryptids. Most cryptids are some sort of like human-animal hybrid-y sort of a thing. But this guy doesn't. I mean, this almost sounds like an alien, which I think some people would say it likely is an alien. So this thing is described as having two short arms, three legs, gray slimy skin, and red eyes that are as big as flashlights. When police arrived at the house, they found dog tracks on the ground. However, there were six toe pad marks on the ground with each track. The monster was spotted again 2 weeks later. This thing starts to draw media attention to the area, and a news director from a radio station named Rick Rainbow went to the area to look for it. And he claims that he saw an ape-like creature in an abandoned building near the original reports of where people were seeing it. And he claims that he recorded the cries. I think there's an audio file out there somewhere where he claims he caught the sounds that this thing makes. So anyway, some people claim that it's an alien. Some say that it's a demon. Some say that it's a genetic mutation gone wrong. I don't know. Whatever happened to it, no one knows. And it remains a mystery to this day. So again, no substantiated or scientific evidence that this alien-ish creature truly exists. But people have claimed to see it.
So when was the last time someone saw it?
As far as I know, 1973, or like the 70s, because I couldn't find anything where there have been any recent sightings of it.
And what was it called again?
The Enfield Horror, or the Enfield Monster, in the Enfield, Illinois area, which is like in southeast Illinois. Like, I think maybe like near the Kentucky, either near the Indiana border or the Kentucky border. It's way down there. So that was Illinois. We're going to hop up to Michigan now for the Beast of Bray Road. All right. This one, I don't like this one either. This is more a Michigan dog manny for me. It gets its name from the area where it was first sighted, which is Bray Road. And this cryptid apparently has baffled cryptozoologists. It is described as a man-wolf, a werewolf. Some say it's something like a Bigfoot. More specifically, it is described as a large wolf-like creature walking on two legs. It has shaggy brownish gray fur and glowing eyes. It's very muscular and has both dog-like and human features and characteristics. First reported in southeastern Wisconsin near the Racine area in the 90s. And there were a lot of sightings of it by people driving by the area near Bray Road. It's been seen crossing the road or just sitting near the side of the road. And some people have claimed and reported that it has chased them in their cars while they've been driving. So now we're back to the whole, do you keep driving away from it or do you try to make sure that you're seeing what you're seeing?
Well, if we're following the example of the guy in the truck, first you shoot it in the head and then you decide whether or not.
Yeah, I guess. There have been corroborated reports that it has been seen in the farm fields in the area. And also, okay, this is what I can't handle this. I don't even know what I would do. That it has been seen peering in windows and it's seemingly very curious about its surroundings.
What part of shoot it in the head are you not catching?
Could you imagine? Oh,
if it's poking its head into a window, it's giving you a perfect target.
But could you imagine like sitting and then all of a sudden something, I can't handle it. There have been connections drawn between this thing, the Beast of Bray Road, and a chupacabra and the Dog Man. It's kind of some sort of like mix in between. Anyway, theories abound that it is a prehistoric species that had survived the test of time, or that it was a genetic mutation gone wrong. Skeptics say it's simply people just misidentifying local critters like a raccoon or something, or that it's somebody dressing up and playing jokes on the community. But the world of cryptozoology is very intrigued by the creature's elusiveness because, again, they can't get a good bead on the guy. And they are continuing to take people's stories and experiences to try to solve the mystery and find evidence of its actual existence. But I'm just telling you, I would probably die if something peered in my window. No, I don't know. I don't know what I would do.
I mean, but like, this is in where? Wisconsin?
No. This is Wisconsin. Yeah.
What if it's just a bear? Do they get wolves in Wisconsin? Do they have?
I don't know.
It's close enough to the Canadian border. I'd imagine some places.
Racine is in southern Wisconsin, closer to Illinois. Closer to the Illinois border. So but I bet you there's coyotes for sure. I don't know about wolves, but I bet they would have coyotes out there. I mean, we have coyotes.
It's just, I don't understand the mindset of seeing something you can't explain and immediately going, it's a monster. I don't think it's likely a monster. I think it's more likely it's, you know, something that we already know exists and you just saw it at a weird angle. I mean, how many times have you seen something at a weird angle and gone, man, that really looks like, and then, I mean, I swear to God, there was there's a cup upstairs in the bathroom that if you look really close at it, you can see that the guy painted on it is looking to the left. For years, I never looked closely at it. And for years, at a distance, it looks like he's got his head tilted and he's looking to the right. It's just a simple matter of perspective. I think that could be applied to several of these quote unquote sightings.
Well, and to your point, all of these sightings happen at night. And I think things can look distorted at night. What you think you're looking at could not be what you're really looking at because of poor lighting or the way the moonlight's hitting it or the way headlights are hitting it. Or, you know, I mean, back to the Loveland Frogman, maybe whatever this man saw wasn't a wand and sparkles, but it was like a sparkler, you know, depending upon how far he was away looking at this thing in the dark.
Well, and okay, I should clarify something as well, because I think I'm probably coming off in this episode as I don't like to entertain the idea of, you know, the cryptic and, you know, the supernatural. And see, no, here's the thing. I would love to cite the Loveland Frogman or, you know, any of these things and prove that they're real, because, you know, that's progress. That's, you know, understanding something better. I am not, when I sound upset, I'm not upset over the claim of some of these things. I'm upset by the methods that people go about to try to make them legitimate.
Okay, well, one, they usually say that eyewitness counts are notoriously inaccurate. And two, though, I don't think I could, I mean, not only would you just be inaccurate just because everything is happening so quickly, but I think too, the element of fear and shock and surprise also plays tricks with your brain. And so I'm just not sure that you would remember things correctly or accurately, maybe. I don't know. I think they're fun legends, though.
I think they're fun, yeah.
So if we go up to, if we go, I should say.
Now I can't insult these.
Well, I mean, let's see what you think of them. So in Minnesota, we have the Wendigo. The story of the Wendigo comes from Native American traditions of the Algonquin, Ojibwe, Eastern Cree, Saulteaux, West Maine, Swampy Creek, Naskapi, and Innu peoples. It is a creature of the cold that roams the Northwoods forests of Minnesota, the Great Lakes, and Canada. Wendigo translates into something along the lines of the evil spirit that devours man. I don't like the sound of this guy. It is described.
I don't like the images on Google.
Well, not all of them are great. I mean, they do vary quite a lot when you look them up.
I mean, these are nightmare fuel.
Right? They look scary. They're terrifying. So the Wendigo is described as 15 feet tall, cold, gaunt, thin, ash gray skin that's pulled tightly over its protruding bones and having some human characteristics. It has really sunken eyes, no lips, and smells of decay and decomposition and makes hissing noises. So I don't like this guy. I like him less than the Michigan Dogman. Some versions of the legend say that it is conjured when humans resort to cannibalism to survive, which would happen long ago when it was super cold up north. Others say the Wendigo possesses humans who display greed and gluttony. Wendigos are cursed to wander the land forever, seeking out human flesh to survive on. It is conjured in the winter months. So Wendigo sightings actually still do happen today, but mostly in Canada. So the Wendigo has moved north, and many people still believe that the Wendigo roams that it is actually still in Minnesota and Canada. I still like the Loveland Frogman and the Beast of Busco better. Yeah, because I didn't care for the Enfield Horror either. That thing sounds weird.
See, but here's the thing. Okay, I have this is a good point to interject here. At least in, you know, your yearly reports of, you know, most common causes of death, at least Wendigo maulings are not up there in the top, you know, whatever. I think as long as you still have a better chance of being attacked by a bull shark in the Mississippi River near the St. Louis Arch than you do of being killed by a Wendigo, I'm okay. I'm okay with them being out there.
To Iowa now for the Van Meter visitor. In 1903, a doctor was awakened by a light coming through his bedroom window. See, again, I can't handle it. He got up, grabbed his shotgun, went outside to see what was going on. He saw a monster perched on top of a telephone pole. He described it as a large bat-like creature that was about 8 feet tall with a wingspan of 12 feet. It had a horn. It has a horn in the middle of its forehead that for some reason has a bright light emitting from it. The good doctor shot at the creature, and it apparently was unfazed by him and flew off into the night. For five more nights, people around the town of Van Meter told stories of seeing this bat-like creature. And one man says that he was attacked and knocked down by it. So the town had had enough of all of this. They were tired of being scared and terrified. So they decided they were going to go find this unwanted visitor. And they go to this old coal mine on the edge of town. And when they got there, they didn't find just one Van Meter visitor. They found two. The one was larger than the other. When the townspeople opened fire on these creatures, they flew deep into the mine. The next day, the people gathered at the mine to see if the creatures would come out, but they never did. And so then the mine was sealed off, and no one has ever seen the Van Meter visitors since. Some people think that the creature was a demon summoned to the town, and others say that it was an extraterrestrial that had landed in Van Meter. But skeptics would say that people were just missing a bird or a bat. So either way, like the Beast of Busco, Van Meter has an annual festival that celebrates their celebrity cryptid. They have a parade and food and live music and everything. But nobody has seen these things in quite some time after since they sealed off the coal mine.
There are several problems with this as well. And I feel obligated to point them out, if for no other reason.
Of course you do.
For Iowa's safety. People of Iowa, have you considered that mine, I assume, is still sealed off, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Anyone considered cracking that sucker open? Because one of two things is going to happen. Either you crack that thing open, send some expendables down there, and figure out whether or not there's anything still. You're either going to find two dead bodies, or you're going to find out that there were two because one was male and one was female, and now they're just waiting to, you know, spring forth and wreak havoc.
Take over the town.
Take over. How long has it been since? If they were procreating down there for however, who knows? They could breed like rabbits. You don't know. Mm-hmm. There could be millions in that mine right now.
It's like over 100 years ago.
Scratch that. There could be billions. People of Iowa, I think you, especially a Van Meter, I think you need to consider this a national security issue.
Well, maybe Momo can help.
Who?
Momo. Momo is the Missouri monster. So maybe he could help with this whole Iowa situation. This guy is like nobody else. He's described as a very large ape-like being covered in, from head to toe in hair. He sounds like a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch type character. But what sets him apart from others is that apparently, and this could scare anybody off really, he has an extremely foul stench that precedes any sightings of him. He was first seen in 1972 when young Doris Harrison was in the house washing the dishes or something, I don't know, and she heard her brothers who were outside playing, and they started screaming. When she looked out the window, she saw this massive, hairy, ugly beast standing at the edge of the woods, covered in blood and clutching a dead dog under its arm. She claims that there was a putrid odor in the air. After the first sighting, more sightings were reported, but a local high school drama teacher had her doubts from the very beginning and has always stood by the idea that it was just a prank that three clever local boys had pulled on the entire town. Doris, however, says, "I saw what I saw. I know what I saw." And she was convinced that Momo wasn't somebody dressed up playing a prank, that it was, in fact, real. So in 1991, the legend resurfaced when a man camping with his family on his family's property said that he locked eyes with the thing while he was out four-wheeling in the woods. And then the most recent sighting of it was on Valentine's Day in 2015 when a man said he saw it in the dusky sunlight crossing the road. So there have been a lot of sightings of Momo, but no photographic or solid evidence exists. Are we seeing a pattern here? No solid evidence. Anyway, many of our cryptids are based on oral tradition without any sort of concrete evidence that they exist. But people swear that Momo is real.
I just want to, if you plan to try to get an idea what Momo looks like, be sure to look up Momo cryptid. Do not just look up Momo. You will find some of the most terrifying images you have ever seen in your life.
And they're not Momo the Missouri Monster?
No, they're far worse. I won't be sleeping tonight, in fact.
Sorry.
Just want to let you know. Actually, that's reverse psychology. People are totally going to do it now. Don't say I didn't warn you. I know you're going to do it. It's not my fault, okay? It's not my fault. I told you what you're supposed to do. So I can't help you if you decided not
to listen.
Well,
now I have to look up Momo because I think everything I looked up was Momo the Missouri Monster. I didn't just look up Momo.
You might scream on the broadcast. Did you already do it?
No, I haven't done it. I was gonna continue our road trip to Kansas. Are you ready for Kansas?
Yes. Please.
Should we get past Momo? Okay. All right. Well, this one again. So Momo, I don't know. I mean, aside from the dog thing, I don't think that like Momo attacks people or anything. He just kind of does his own things and is creepy out there in the woods. Okay. So in Inman Lake in Kansas is apparently where our next cryptid lives. He goes by the name of Sinkhole Sam. That doesn't sound scary at all. Sinkhole Sam. Sam is a 15-foot long, 730-pound. Now, how can you estimate 730 pounds is what I want to know. But apparently he is a 730-pound water serpent. He is described as being as big around as a tire, and he is either white with black stripes or black and brown stripes. Either way, he sounds like a sandworm to me. Sinkhole Sam was first seen in 1952 when two men were out fishing. Then another two fishermen reported seeing the same creature.
Always the fisherman. Where is all this action? Because I've never seen anything like this.
I was going to ask you if you've ever seen, like, if when all of you guys go fishing, if you ever see any of these weird creatures.
You hear the wildest stories from fishermen. I swear, it's just because they've had such a boring day, they need to make up for it.
Maybe your timing is just bad, because apparently Sinkhole Sam is quite shy of humans. He is incredibly quick, and he sinks back into the water just as soon as he rises out of it, and maybe gets the first glimpse of a person is like, nope, I'm out. He is thought to live in an underground cave system, or sinkhole thing, that connects to... Well, no, I guess the underground cave system connects to the sinkhole where he's been seen, and he's not overly concerned about humans. So apparently he just eats the fish in the lake. I don't know. If you're fishing in Inman Lake, be careful, because you might end up with Sinkhole Sam on the end of your line.
I just don't understand why. You know, you see strange stuff sometimes while you're out fishing, but... I've never thought that it would be because of a sandworm from Dune.
A giant serpent-y sort of a...
Yeah.
Who's friendly, by the way. Not mean.
He's got that.
I can handle those types of cryptids. I can't handle these ones that chase trucks and cars and...
Are there...
lurk in the woods.
Are there sightings of Sam or alleged ones? Like,
I don't think there have been any recently, no. It was kind of hard to find on some of these things. It was kind of hard to find, like, the last time anybody had seen some of these creatures. They all seem, I don't know. They're all, like, historical sort of sightings, like this next one. We go back to 1935 for this one. In Nebraska, we have the Walgren Lake Monster, also known as, to me, this looks like Alkali Lake, but I think they might pronounce it Alkali Lake Monster or Giganticus Brutervicious. I might not be saying that right. But apparently, This guy lives in Walgreen Lake in near Hay Springs. It is a giant alligator looking creature with grayish brown scales, I guess, with a horn on its head between its eyes and nostrils. And it's also been described as like looking like a dragon.
Sounds like people can't make up their minds.
Well, this is another one that really sounds like it has its roots in a Native American oral tradition, because apparently there were a lot of Native Americans that said that there was a beast living in the lake. But in 1935, a woman named Mary Sandoz wrote a biography called Old Jules, where she claimed that some Christians in the area said that the creature had been created by Satan to, quote, test the faith of the locals. And then later accounts of the Walgreen monster had it acquiring some supernatural talents, too. For example, apparently the earth would tremble when it moved, and that it was capable of coming out of the lake and being on land once a day just to eat as many livestock as it could. And that it created a thick green mist that would hang in the air. But again, no evidence or corroborated science. But I'd still be careful around this lake, because who knows? You never know.
Okay. There just seems to be scapegoating all over the place here. Oh my God, it's an earthquake. It must be the Walgreen Lake monster. Oh my God, it's foggy outside. It must be the Walgreen Lake monster.
Only if it's green fog. Okay, the next two really do truly have their roots in Native American oral tradition. Okay, so in South Dakota, we have the Takuhi, which in the Lakota language means big man. Okay, I kind of like Takuhi. Anyway, just hear me out here. Again, he is a Bigfoot Sasquatch type being. He is described as being taller than the average human man, somewhere between 7 and 9 feet tall. Short legs, but big feet. He is very muscular, covered all over in either dark brownish to black hair, flat face, small ears, eyes that glow in the dark. But your dog's eyes glow in the dark, really, if the light hits it right. Takuhi lives and roams the plains and forests of South Dakota, especially near the Sikahalo State Park. The Lakota tradition says, well, one says that it is a guardian spirit that protects the land from invaders and intruders. But another version of the story says that it is an evil creature that preys on humans and animals. I prefer the first narrative. The majority of sightings of Takuhi were during the 70s, and since then there have been sightings, but they have been a little bit rarer. Maybe that's because that while Takuhi is very intelligent and curious, he avoids human contact at all costs. Apparently, though, he knows how to mimic human sounds like whistling, laughing, crying, and calling out names. But it communicates with its own kind through grunts and howls and screams. There are a lot of theories to explain Takuhi, that maybe he's a primate species or a mutation of a human primate interbreeding experiment gone wrong, that it is some kind of supernatural being, or probably your most favorite explanation is that Takuhi is a hoax. Whatever the case may be, I would still probably take a buddy with me to go hiking in the Sikahalo State Park at night, or I just wouldn't go hiking at night.
I thought you said he's friendly.
Well, you know, this was really weird. Okay, so in the research that I did find this YouTube video of this guy that was doing all of the cryptids of all of the states. And when he came to Takuhi, he found stories that said that some people reported that Takuhi either will wear a top hat or an overcoat. I don't know where you get a hat that big or an overcoat that big. I don't know. But I don't know. Like, I'm not scared of the idea of a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch, because they don't bother people. They don't want to be around people. It's the dog man and the Bray Road guy that you have to be worried about. All right. Last but not least, we are ending our cryptid adventure in North Dakota with the Thunderbird. And like the Wendigo and Takuhee, the story comes from Native American traditions of the Algonquin and Iroquois. So the Thunderbird, like its name describes, it is a giant bird that is said to be so big that when it flaps its wings, it makes the sound of thunder, and that lightning comes from its eyes when it blinks its eyes. It has colorful feathers, sharp teeth, and sharp claws. And one story has it being described as something of a giant eagle that once carried off a whale. The Thunderbird is said to symbolize power and strength that protects humans from evil spirits. It brings the rain and storms, which is good if the land needs the rain, but it is bad because it can be destructive, bringing high winds, floods, and causing fires with the lightning. The Ojibwe tradition says that Manabozha created the Thunderbirds to fight the underwater spirits that bring floods. The Menominee say that Thunderbirds live on a floating mountain, and they control the rain and the hail. They like fighting, and they also like deeds of greatness. They are messengers of the sun god. And the Sioux say that Thunderbirds teach humans how to live in harmony with nature. So again, like, I don't mind. Actually, I kind of like the Thunderbird. I mean, he actually sounds like he's more helpful to me than a critter that's meant to scare the bejesus out of us.
Maybe the Thunderbirds protect people from the Wendigos.
Honestly, maybe. I would be okay with that. The Wendigo only comes out in the winter, though.
Uh-oh. No Thunderbirds to protect us from the Wendigos.
I mean, would the Thunderbirds be around in the wintertime?
I don't see much thunder during the winter.
There's snow thunder. It could be a Thunderbird. Well, I don't know about everybody else, but I mean, I know that you're a skeptic. I think you're on the skeptic side of things.
They're fun stories. I think they're fun stories. And I think they're fun as part of cultural and regional traditions. And I think it's important to have those traditions. It's one of these difficult things where it's, you know, it's all about belief, right? So if you believe in it, then it's, you know, obviously worth something to you. But if you don't, then it's easy to question it and question other people as to why it's worth something to them. So, I mean, let people be people at the end of the day. I think, you know, it's just my personal opinion that I wouldn't put, you know, a ton of time and effort into it. But if that's something fun for other people, then I won't begrudge them it.
Well, I don't. I'm just saying, for my part, I'm going to be taking a buddy with me if I'm hiking in the woods in the Midwest. Or I'm just not going to go at night. But if I do, I'm going to try to have my camera at the ready to catch the photographic evidence. My favorite cryptid was the Thunderbird. If you had to pick one cryptid that would have been your favorite from this whole thing, or I also do like Takuhee. It might be a close one, too, between Takuhee and Thunderbirds. But what would your favorite cryptid be?
I still think that, what was it,
The Van Meter visitors?
Van Meter, yeah. Van Meter needs to figure that out.
Iowa?
they need to make sure that there isn't something about to bubble up out of the ground in Van Meter. If we're going to spend money on anything... Yeah, it's opening up that mine and making sure that there are no Van Meter monsters pouring
out of the abandoned coal mine. Well,
although I also did like Sam. The idea of Sam.
Oh, yeah. Sinkhole Sam. Good. I don't know.
Well, and if I'm remembering now, in terms of credibility, I would give the most credibility to Busco, to Ollie.
Oh, yeah. Just as being
Oscar,
the most
Ollie.
Oscar. Yeah.
Oscar.
Yeah. Because a giant turtle is plausible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, are you ready for this week's fun corn fact?
I am.
So I did find this fun corn fact. Corn stalks can grow up to 13 feet tall. So I'm just saying, with, you know, any of these Bigfoot, Sasquatch, overgrown critters, none of them have been described as being anything over 10 feet. So when the corn is high, you know, you might be on the lookout for Momo, the Wendigo, or Takuhee amongst the cornfields. I'm just saying, something to keep an eye on.
There you go. There's your next horror thriller. Set in a corn maze where the Wendigo is just chasing you. And you have to get the... Forget Children of the Corn. No.
I know. I know, right? It'd have to be...
When the Wendigo is lurking for you in the cornfields, that's when you should be.
Well, those are your Midwestern cryptids.
Well, folks, that does it for this week's episode. Thank you for listening. And remember, while there's so much to see and do throughout the Midwest, it's our farmers and our farm families who feed us all and feed the world, really. And we appreciate everything they do. So please join us next time, and we will see you then. Bye for now.